And our first question will come from the New York Times, Lisa Friedman. Your line is open.
Thanks for holding the call. Can you hear me okay?
Let's try talking and see if I actually can't hear you.
Okay. So Mr. Zinke already said this morning to the Associated Press in Montana that he's not eliminating any of the monuments that presumably include Bears Ears, which you called for eliminating. Is that a disappointment to you? And related, is this apparent decision not to rescind any monuments, do you think a nod to what seems to be a very broad legal opinion that the president doesn't have that authority?
Well, once again, that whether he has that authority or not is still in question. I don't think it really should be in a question. And I think it would be wise to actually look and see when the entire report is given, and that will be determined by when the White House wishes to has had a chance to review the report and then present it to see what is or is not either recommended for rescission or recommended for reduction or recommended to do nothing about it. So I don't want to jump to conclusions. I know there are going to be a lot of rumors that will be leaking out there of what is or is not in the report. I think it behooves us all to wait and actually see the report before we respond to what may or may not be in there.
But just to clarify, this isn't a rumor. Mr. Zinke said it.
Let's wait until the report's actually out there.
One moment for our next question, please. Our next question comes from Valerie Volkovici of Reuters. Your line is open.
Hi, Congressman Bishop. Just in terms of what Congress can do to carry out some of the recommendations, which we'll learn about in due course, how do you see your role? Do you see the committee taking up kind of smaller pieces of legislation to respond to the individual monuments or a kind of overhaul of the Antiquities Act? What's possible in this Congress?
I think the answer has to be yes to all of the above. There will be specific recommendations that I assume will be made, and those recommendations will need congressional action to implement them. For example, on the Bears Ears Monument, the issue of co-management is important to me, and I think it's important to the Native Americans who live in Utah, whose reservation abuts this area and who have used this for their traditional practices. But co-management or management practices that the President Obama said he was going to grant cannot be given. He doesn't have the power to do that. Only Congress can. And I want to see Congress move in that direction to make sure that that becomes a reality. So there will be some efforts, I think, for specific problems that will be identified in Secretary Zinke's report once it's totally released that we will be looking. But at the same time, I told you this is a process issue. And this is a process issue where the intent of the act has been distorted. And I think Congress needs to make sure we do some reforms of the act to ensure, number one, that the process will be adhered in the future, and number two, that we can ensure that local communities have the chance to have their voices heard. To be honest, right now, if there was a full-scale review and local input, it would trigger a NEPA process that the last few presidents, have not wanted or were not willing to go through, even though everyone else has to. And that needs to be clarified. We need to make sure that local communities do have a chance to be heard in this process, and this does not become a politically motivated gotcha moment in creating a monument. That's not the purpose of the Antiquities Act. So, yeah, there needs to be a reform, and that's an overall reform of the process to make sure that the specific intent of the Antiquities Act will be adhered in the future, not by this administration, but by the next administration and the one after that as well.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Alan Kofsky of Bloomberg. Your line is open.
Hello. I get you that the main point here is the principle and how the process works. I can't help but be curious, though, about what we've heard so far on Bears Ears from back in June, whether the change to the borders of Bears Ears makes much difference, or whether that's entirely overshadowed by the proposed changes, whether that makes much difference for the local people, the local economy, or whether it's entirely overshadowed by the principle that you mentioned.
Can you try that question one more time? I'm not sure the direction you really want me to go on that.
Yeah, in June, Secretary Zinke made his recommendations for changing the borders of Bears Ears, basically to reduce them. And I don't know that that makes much a difference economically for people or oil and gas companies or ranchers in the area. I understand that you're more focused on the principle of how these things are done than those particular details, but I still can't help but wonder if those details that Zinke proposed, at least, or recommended, whether they make much difference for the local community and economy.
It depends, once again. What the boundaries will be as proposed in the final report, we will probably try to adhere to those boundaries. But what was also intended was the concept of co-management. Who makes control of how traditional activities that have been done by the Navajos whose reservation abuts this land, whether those will be maintained or not? It is clearly in the designation proclamation for the monument. It is clearly they did not specify that those will be maintained or guarantee they will be maintained. And the declaration for the creation of the monument tried to imply that the Native Americans in Utah who live there would have the ability of management of that land and co-management to make the rules. And that clearly is a power the president doesn't have, but it should have been done there. And the only way it can be done is by Congress doing that. So my intent of making sure that the co-management actually does take place statutorily, that will have an impact in the future for the people who live in San Juan County, where the Bears Ears Monument is located. So yeah, that could become extremely significant. The size of the boundaries it could be a moot issue. It was all public land before, controlled by various designations by BLM and guaranteed and protected by BLM. In the monument designation, it was still federal land controlled by BLM. After adjustments are made, it will still be federal land controlled by BLM. The important part is to put in statute here what practices on Bears Ears will be maintained, who gets to have the management say, and yeah, that could have a major impact in the future. So the answer to your question is actually to both. The creation of a monument in and of itself, as far as economic input, who knows? I'm also a little bit frustrated with you putting in like grazing and oil and gas industry. The oil and gas elements of this are really minimal, if any at all. Grazing becomes significant, and there are a lot of people whose livelihood depends on grazing, and yeah, that becomes a significant element in the issue of Bears Ears specifically. The claims that there's all sorts of mining potential and exploration of resources development potential is a clearly exaggerated claim that in many cases is more scare tactic than reality.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Josh Siegel of the Washington Examiner. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks, Chairman Bishop, for taking the call. I'm just wondering, as far as legal challenges to whatever might come out of this review, how concerned are you that this might drag out and that there's, potentially, I know there is some precedent for shrinking monuments, but maybe not to the scale that might be proposed, although again, obviously it's speculating, but yeah, just kind of how this might drag out and if that concerns you.
We seem to be living in an age where litigation is the obvious norm, even though it becomes counterproductive. And there are some groups out there that actually, I think, make a nice income for their interest group by doing litigation. So the fact that somebody will sue somebody at some time is probably a given, although I couldn't predict that, and I would hope it would not be the case. Regardless of it, what the review will indicate, I'm assuming, is that many of these monuments are created without going through a clear and easy process of allowing local input so you can find out where the problem areas are. And that's why I say the purpose of the original Antiquities Act was to protect an antiquity in a small area, small footprint. Right. When you make a 1.5 million acre monument, you're going to include all sorts of areas that don't have antiquities and that have other processes and reasons, and you got problems with it. Many of these monuments have incorporated and enclosed private property in holdings without coming up with a procedure to handle that situation on what you do. There are school trust lands in all of these areas that have been incorporated without having a process of how you do it. If instead of the Antiquities Act, which has to be done as a gotcha effort, making a political statement for whatever political purposes you have, if we actually believe the antiquities process should be working to there protect specific entities and objects of antiquity, then we would logically come up with a new process to make sure that we go through and ask these questions. People have a chance to see the maps before they are presented in the declaration. People have a chance to say, yeah, but here's a problem area, and we can work through those. That is inherent in the legislative process. That's what the legislature and Congress is supposed to be doing. And when the president supersedes that legislative authority and just arbitrarily declares millions of acres now as a monument to be allowed for the land manager to make up the rules as he or she goes along, then problems obviously develop. And I think that's what the report from Zinke to the White House will clearly show is happening. And that has to be changed. And whether that is litigated or not, at some point we have to bring some rationality into the process so that local governments and local people do feel like they've had their voices heard, which was not the case in many of these monuments, and more importantly, so that it is done rationally and many of the problems that would be worked out in a congressional action should be worked out ahead of time before there is any kind of monument designation made by a president. So I'm rambling here, and I'm trying to restate what I think is the obvious. The process is broken. It is not working as was intended. It needs to be reformed. And this is not about energy development. This is not about, it's not about whether we're anti-park. It's not about recreation. In fact, one of the most important things we could do in reworking some of these monument declarations is guarantee recreation access, which is not guaranteed in a simple proclamation of a monument. So these things are the issues. And because the White House and the Secretary will not give the specifics of what they are doing, and it's appropriate, they need time to reflect on how they wish to do it. It's their prerogative, it's their right, and it's the proper thing to do. It's important for us to realize this was started because there were abuses of the system, and Congress needs to step up and clarify how it is used in the future so there will not be abuses in the future. I'm off the soapbox. I'll take the next question.
The next question comes from Jennifer Yacknin of E&E News. Your line is open.
Thanks for having the call. I just wanted to clarify two things. Are you saying that you haven't been briefed on the Interior report and that it actually won't be public until the White House has seen it? And then I also wanted to ask if you've got a timeline for introducing your reform legislation.
Into all those things, the timeline of doing these changes, whether they are small changes that will be identified in the report or whether it's simply the Antiquities Act, I want to wait until the report has been released, people have a chance to see it, then we can go from there. I will tell you, though, it has to be sooner rather than later, because the problem will not be solved until we actually have Congress step up and do it. So that timeline becomes extremely important. But I can't tell you a specific timeline yet, because I don't know when the release will actually be there so that the full report can be seen by everyone. And I would like to see that happen before we start working on legislation or before we introduce before I introduce legislation. I'd like to see that report being seen and being digested by everybody. So I can't tell you a specific timeline of when we'll start moving on any of these, whether they be small or the overall change, but I can tell you it's going to be sooner rather than later.
And have you been briefed on the report yourself, Mr. Chairman?
I have had conversations with the Secretary I'm not going to go into the detail of what was or was not said. I can tell you I don't know all the details of all the reports, so I would like to see that.
Our next question comes from Esther Wheeldon of Politico. Your line is open.
Hi. Just to follow up on that, I didn't necessarily hear a response from you on whether you have a sense of whether the Interior plans on publicizing Zinke's report or waiting for the White House to do that.
I don't have an answer for that. It is it's very clear, I think, the intention that Mr. Zinke will present the White House his report today. At some time, the White House needs to have the chance to look at it, review it, figure out where they want to do it, and they will respond as to the releasing of the details of that when they are prepared to do so, and that is obvious, and I don't know when that will be.
So then what's your position on that? You know, you said you need to know it soon, right? You want to have it ahead as soon as possible so that you can start working on legislation. So if Zinke doesn't make this report public, if he just puts out a press release today that says, I sent the report and I did what AP said I did in their article today, if that's all that happens, would you support that, Zinke not making that report public so the public can be aware of what issues Trump is considering?
Well, at some point in time, it's a kind of a moot issue. At some point in time, it will be public. Whether that is tomorrow or the next day is pretty irrelevant, I think, in the overall view of what we're talking about. I don't intend for them, in my wildest imagination, I cannot imagine the White House will not make it public within the next 3 years. But they do need to have time.
Well, I mean, there's FOIA, so obviously it'll come up for that.
Well, they know. They do need, it is fair and obvious that they need time to read the report, to get it there, to have a chance to talk internally about it, to figure out what they will or will not recommend as a president. And the White House needs time to do that. That's obvious, and that's appropriate. There's nothing wrong with that. And at the point when they do release that, I think at that point in time, we will be releasing legislation.
Okay, so to be clear, you think it's appropriate if Zinke does not make his recommendations public? On his
today?
End. Yes. Or in the next week, or in the next whatever. If he leaves that to the White House.
All right. You broke up a couple of times in there. I think in the next whatever is appropriate. What I'm saying
If Zinke doesn't, on his end, release the report, is that appropriate?
The appropriate action is for him to give the report to the White House, give the White House a chance to kind of review it and figure out what they're going to do, and then to release it publicly. However long that takes is their choice and their will. But it is appropriate that they be given some time to digest it, since they haven't seen it. They will not have seen it before today. So they're following the intent of the law. They're following the letter of the law, and I think that's appropriate. Give them a chance to digest it and then figure and then come up with their recommendations and then make the entire thing public. To be made public, yes, obviously. It doesn't have to be, but I think it is fair also to give the players a chance to actually review it and think about it before they have to make public statements on it. So, yeah, I think whatever is a good time frame.
But then why would Zinke release his interim report, but then not this? Is it just, I mean, it sounds to me like he's just scared of pushback on his end.
Well, I don't have the great vision you do to see into the heart of why he's doing things.
I think
I'm telling you right now, it is appropriate to give people time to think and see this report before they make it public. 3 years, in my estimation, would not be appropriate as far as the timeline, but giving them some days, some weeks to actually accommodate and figure out what they're going to do once they see the final official version. I don't see anything wrong with that.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Tim Pucco of the Wall Street Journal. Your line is open.
Hi, Representative. Wanted to ask you a question about how you talk about process. It seems like the process through which these monuments were designated is really important to you, but it sounds like what's coming from Interior is more about the boundaries and specifications of each monument itself. I'm kind of wondering if you could explain like a little bit more about your expectations for this report and what you want from it. How much does it matter to you whether what Interior discusses is the process of the designation of these monuments and how much of it is the merits of each monument on its own.
Thank you. I think that's, you know, that's a good and legitimate question to the heart of the issue. If the Interior Department does or does not make recommendations for changes in either boundaries or practices or any boundaries or practices, if they make those recommendations, they will probably say why they make those recommendations, and it will spell out a failure in the Antiquities Act process of the executive branch to consider issues that should have been considered. And I think what we'll get when we finally see the entire report, although once again, I'm making a couple of assumptions here, when we see the entire report, they will clearly show that there are problems that were developed in the designation that did not need to be problems if we had done this in an open process ahead of time. Clearly the problem with the Antiquities Act as it has been abused by, and really just a handful of presidents, I think there are very few that I think have abused the act, but those who have. And they have made it into a political statement in a gotcha moment. That is not the way good policy is made. And I think you will see, as you either read the report or maybe you read between the lines in the report, you will see that they will clearly identify where the process failed, and that needs to be fixed in the future. And not just by executive fiat, it needs to be fixed legislatively, and that's where Congress needs to step in and reform the entire process for the Antiquities Act.
So it sounds like what you're saying is regardless of Interior's ultimate recommendations, if they're maybe smaller or more focused than the larger process, that you're eager to look at the flaws that they point out and then use, you know, Congress, use your congressional authority to try to learn from that and legislate fixes so that those problems, those failures don't happen again?
I think that's the important part here. We have seen legislative authority given to the executive branch can be distorted and misused. That should not be the case. And if something was created in a flawed way, a flawed process that created a flawed product, we should make sure that we change legally what is done to ensure that that does not happen again. We cannot replicate failures in the future. And if we don't do reforms of the Antiquities Act, we will have a replication of failures in the future. And that's just wrong. It's not why we are back in Congress in the first place. So I think we will see a lot of fodder in there that will give rational reasons on why there has to be some reform. We don't need to eliminate the Antiquities Act totally. We just need to go back to what its purpose was, to protect an object that was in imminent danger until we have a chance to make some rational approaches on how we do it, and that we should be dealing with objects of antiquity, not large landscape view sheds. And maybe even look at the original intent when we talk about how we protect antiquities. Maybe you don't need 1.5, maybe you don't need the size that's double the size of a state of the nation to actually protect an antiquity. Maybe there's a more rational approach to it. And hopefully Congress will be able to address that and do it.
Thank you.
And our final question today comes from Jay Higgins of Maine Public Radio. Your line is open.
Well, good morning, Congressman, and thanks for the opportunity to present this forum. I just had a quick question for you with respect to the overreach by the administration that you had mentioned in the designation of these areas. Here in Maine, as you probably are aware, the Kennebec Woods and Waters National Monument was only 87,500 acres and seems perhaps to be of a size that that would be in keeping with the intent of the Antiquities Act. Otherwise, this monument here in Maine seems to be an outlier. Do you think it deserves to be?
I don't know what you mean by outlier.
It was an acre criteria that was set up in the first place for review of national monuments.
Once again, it would have been helpful in Maine if they had gone through the public process that would take place automatically if it was done legislatively. And having the delegation involved in the creation of that monument would have been something that I think could have smoothed out some of the discontent that's up there with it, and it could, I think, produce in the long term a better monument. And having said that, I think it would be wise of all of us to wait until you see the actual report and what it actually says dealing with specifics of that monument and every other monument. Because once again, if the procedure is flawed, this is one of the things I learned as a state legislature a number of years ago. If the procedure is flawed, the product's going to be flawed. And sometimes the procedure is even more important than the actual product itself. And if you control the procedure, sometimes you can actually control the outcome. And that's why I want to make sure that we learn the lessons from all of these, the review of all of these monuments, and make sure we make procedural changes to ensure that in the future, if a monument is going to be designated, it's going to be designated with full review and full input from people who are most impacted by it, specifically those who live nearby. So, you know, I was up in Maine. I attended some of the public comments. There were a lot of comments on both sides, but it was a fairly divisive issue. And I think we need to come up with a process to make sure that all of that is vetted ahead of time and not simply by a president making a declaration saying, this is it, because I want it to be that way. That's not the way public land should be. Should be designated in the future.
And at this point, we'll turn it back to Molly Block.
Thank you so much for joining us all today. If you have any further questions, feel free to reach out to me directly at molly.block@mail.house.gov or call us over here in the committee press shop. We will answer any follow-up questions you have. We really appreciate you sticking with us. Thank you so much and have a great day.